Action, weekday mornings at 8 a.m. on 990 WDEO.
Catholic Radio in Metro Detroit. This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
My pleasure to welcome back to Church and Culture Irish composer John Kinsella. And if you've heard any of my previous programs with John, you'll know that he is one of Ireland's most important composers, either living or dead. And he's called the most prolific symphonist in Ireland present day because he has 11 symphonies. And today we're going to hear his fourth, called The Four Provinces. And John, before we start talking about the symphony, it occurred to me as I was listening to your music today, especially this symphony, were you influenced at all by, not that he wasn't Irish, but he had an Irish father, E.J. Murren?
Yes, I know his music very well, and it's not something that really struck me, but I would not be surprised if you got that impression, especially in this particular work.
Yes, because in this work, this work, like your fifth symphony, is explicitly about your homeland.
Yes, that's true indeed. This symphony is, if you like, tries to catch the personality in a broad sense of each of the four provinces of Ireland. And to structure it, I had this picture of the prevailing southwest wind coming in across the Atlantic.
That would have been the province of Munster.
Yes. That would be the first.
And how am I? You're going to have to correct all my pronunciation here.
So Munster is fine.
Okay, and that includes Clare, Cork, Kerry, Limerick, Tipperary, and Waterford.
Yes, that's correct.
And that's the first of the four movements of the four provinces of this four symphony. And by the way, I want our listeners to know. And I'm going to confess I didn't know Ireland had four provinces. I knew the counties pretty well because I played golf in most of them. I would agree with the music that goes with all these provinces because these courses play exactly like the music sounds. Tell us, let's go through the provinces before we start listening to the symphony. The second province is what?
The second province is Connacht, which is the most westerly province across the Atlantic coast.
Okay, it's Galway, Mayo, Sligo,
Roscommon,
and Leitrim.
And Leitrim, that would be correct, yes. I'm not sure if they have a golf course in Leitrim, but you probably correct me on that.
I'll find out.
Okay. And then the third one that the wind would encounter as a southwesterly course from the southwest would be Ulster, which consists of 9 counties, 3 of which are in the Republic, and 6 of which comprise Northern Ireland.
So that would be Antrim, Armagh, Cavan, Donegal, Fermanagh, Londonderry, Monaghan, and Tyrone.
Yes.
And by the way, my ancestors are from Londonderry.
Are they?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
How far back?
She was the lady who married an Englishman and came to the United States in at the turn of this 1700s.
Oh.
The early 1700s.
Yes.
And then you end up in, is it Leinster?
Leinster.
Leinster. And that's
Leinster.
Dublin, Louth, Wicklow, Meath, Kilkenny, and Carlow.
Yes, that's correct. And that's the most easterly province, and it has the capital city. So that's the framework for the order of movements in the symphony.
And all of these are, you describe them in terms of that southwest wind going over them. Now, what's the significance of the southwest wind? Is that the predominant wind in Ireland?
It's the dominant wind. It's quite a warm, moist wind. When it is blowing, it hasn't been blowing this year. But it travels, you know, from your country to ours when it's in line. And it comes up from the Gulf of Mexico with the Gulf Stream and has a... it keeps the island much warmer than it should be at this latitude. So I had this picture of this wind sort of racing across the Atlantic waves and suddenly crashing into the high mountains of Kerry, which actually has the highest mountain in the country in Carn Tuil.
I want to ask you one more question before we begin listening to the first movement about Munster, and that is, you know, as I've listened to your music getting ready for these interviews we've done, I believe this is the third or fourth, my love for your music, my respect for you just grows and grows, and I begin to really hear in my mind or know familiarity with your with Kinsel of sound, as it were, and it's unique, and it's unique. It's not, how shall I say, Sibelian or anybody else. It's your sound, and it often touches base with your homeland, either explicitly or implicitly. And you know, given the lack of performances of your music recently, not so much in the past where there were a lot of performances. Is the fact that your music is Irish classical music, is that become an obstacle to your being performed?
It probably is, because as most of my colleagues would find that, you know, moving around and talking to people from other countries and that, the concept of an Irish classical composer is a kind of an odd thing. People don't sort of imagine that there could be such a thing, especially somebody writing symphonies. We have such a strong tradition of folk music here that is the identifying factor, I think, for people from around the world who think of Ireland. They think of our folk music. And our structures, music is definitely the Cinderella of the arts here, and the structure for performing the music, well, it's adequate, it's not bad for a country this size. But I was on a commission a few years ago, went to Finland to see what happened there, and they have their independence for the same amount of time, and they have a similar population. We have one symphony orchestra, and they have something like 37.
Yeah, that's such a surprise with such a rich, with a country that loves music so much like Ireland does.
Yeah,
surprising,
extraordinary.
By the way, John, I discovered a thread about you on a classical music blog called GoodMusicGuide.com. If you haven't seen it, I'll send it to you, the link. People say wonderful things about your music, and they also get it. I also have been reading the reviews of the various CDs, and a few reviewers respect your music, but they don't get it, and it makes me a little mad, but I'm not going to go seek them out and send them nasty emails.
No, don't.
I just know your music will prevail.
Thank you very much, Steve. Really appreciate that.
Well, let's listen to the opening of your fourth symphony, and this was written
1991 and first performed in 1992.
And this is on Marco Polo with the National Symphony Orchestra of Ireland, conducted by your good friend, whose name is?
Francesco Din.
Let's listen to the first part of the first movement about Munster. This was the opening to John Kinsella's Fourth Symphony, The Four Provinces, and this is the province of Munster. And, John, orchestras must love playing your music because you give them such rich orchestration. So you give them a lot to do, and everyone, whether they're winds, brass, or strings, percussion, seem to have their moment when they come forward to contribute sort of the main statement of that part of the symphony.
Yes. Yes, indeed. It's a, the orchestra is such a rich color scheme. You know, it's wonderful. It's endless, the mixtures one can think of. And being a sort of amateur player myself, I know the attraction of having your moment on the stage. So yeah, so
you could really hear the wind.
Particular passage.
You could really hear the wind blowing, and you seem to use predominantly the strings for that effect. Am I correct?
Yes, the strings at when they're at their loudest, they're about halfway through that episode. The strings and wind are playing together. But inevitably, the flutes and high oboes will come through and dominate.
And did you do all this from memory, or did you do any traveling to sort of refresh your memory of what these places are like?
It's from memory, certainly not from traveling specifically. I've traveled the country many times, so I have a feeling for the differences. But it's in that particular case, it's a question of the geographic structure, with the wind colliding with the very high mountains and then freewheeling across plains. After afterwards. And
I'm going to remind our listeners as we listen to the latter part of this first movement about the province of Munster. This includes counties Clare, Cork, Kerry, Limerick, Tipperary, and Waterford, a place very popular to American visitors, as I'm sure you know. So let's listen to the ending of this great first movement.
Thank you.
That was the last 5 minutes of the first movement of John Kinsella's Four Provinces Symphony. John, I noticed that for a while you had renamed it the Birmingham Six. Why did you do that?
Yes, it just happened. It was a big moment in when the group were found innocent after so many years. And it just happened that I was completing the symphony, the last few pages, when this happened. And on a kind of impulse, I gave it the subtitle. And I changed it back to the Four Provinces, which was my original idea, when I realized that the sort of dedication of such a work to that particular event would actually mean nothing to the people involved. So I reverted to the original title then at that stage.
Again, another gesture of yours to connect your music to your homeland and even to its current events. In this next movement, it's been described as severe, and with and you've called it with sharply etched horizons. Why is that?
Yes. Well, as you may recall yourself from your travels, Connacht is by far the most bleakly beautiful province.
Yes.
It even has some small fjords on it reaching out into the Atlantic.
Right.
And it's the least heavily populated province as well. And there's always been a move away from people growing up. They tend to move away. So it keeps renewing itself all the time with a thin population compared to the rest of the country. But they're the most wonderful people. And I'm trying to draw the contrast there between the actual geographic atmosphere that you get with the starkness of it, with the warmth of the people themselves.
And how true that is.
Quite a heady mix.
I love my round at Sligo Golf Club. So let's listen to it's Connacht, and we're going to pick it up.
Yes.
Connacht. We're going to pick it up in the middle and play as far as we can until we come to break time. Let's listen.
Thank you.
such powerful music. That's from the second movement of John Kinsella's Fourth Symphony entitled The Four Provinces. That was the Connaught province. Am I correct, John?
Just Connaught, yes.
Got it. And we're going to move on to the Ulster province right after this short break.
Hi, this is Father John Ricardo, inviting you to join me as we explore some of the deepest questions that arise in our hearts, questions that shape the way we think, the way we speak, and the way we live. For all of these questions, Christ is the answer.
On our next Christ is the Answer program, we present two talks from men's conferences by Father John Ricardo. It's tirelessly running the race from the 2013 Detroit men's event, and a fireside chat with the Lord from the 2008 Massachusetts men's conference. Listen to Christ is the Answer Wednesday evenings at 8, Saturday afternoons at 5, and Sunday mornings at 11 on Ave Maria Radio at AveMariaRadio.net on the Internet.
Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. He is the image of the invisible God. He points us to our destiny. He reveals the dignity of the human person. He is the one who makes known the Father. Christ is the Answer.
Christ is the Answer is brought to you by the Ave Maria Communications Guild.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popchak.
Too many people treat marriage like it's a guaranteed date for bowling night, but marriage is so much more. Catholics know that marriage is a sacrament. When two Catholics get married, they're asserting that God Himself called them together, and because of that, they promised both to help each other become the people God created them to be in this life, and to help each other get to heaven in the next. It's those promises that make a church wedding different from every other kind of marriage. So all you Catholic husbands and wives, live your vocation. Pray together. Challenge each other every day to be better, more loving, more godly people. And commit to your own growth by responding generously to each other's needs. If you do, you'll begin to have the marriage you promised to create together the day you stood at the altar and said, I do. I'm Dr. Greg Popchak, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
I'm back with composer John Kinsella, who's talking to us from Dublin, and we're talking about and listening to his Fourth Symphony, The Four Provinces. We've listened to the first two, and now we're going to move to the Ulster section of the symphony, which is, by the way, the one that the reviewers like the most. They loved it as a scherzo movement, and it's been described as a exuberant, almost violent scherzo. What were you thinking about as you composed this music, John?
As you may know, I'm sure you know, in the early 90s and through the mid-90s, there was a very difficult political situation in Ulster, and it reached very violent heights at times. So at the time I was writing the symphony, that would have been in practically everybody's mind, the first thing one would think of when you mention Ulster, that is some dreadful things happening up there with political upheavals and that, and a lot of violence. So this is really what the movement is trying to express, is the collision of two groups. And I add in a second set of timpani into this movement, so there are two sets of timpani playing through this. And in the end, there's no reconciliation, but I wasn't to know that 6 years later there would be. So the whole position has changed, as you know, since then. But at the time of writing, that was the perception.
But it should never be forgotten, and that's why I'm glad we've got this to play. Well, this is the Ulster movement of John Kinsella's Fourth Symphony, The Four Provinces. Let's listen to the opening. was the opening to the third of the four provinces described in John Kintzler's fourth symphony. We're about to listen to the ending of that same movement. John, you certainly successfully described, I should say, in music, the very tragic conflict that lasted for so long between Catholics and Protestants in Ulster.
Yes, indeed.
Which, at the writing, you didn't know would ever be resolved.
At that time, one couldn't anticipate what eventually happened 6 years later, which is a wonderful transition and an amazing achievement.
It really is. And so let's listen to the last part of the Ulster province section of the Fourth Symphony. John, it sounds as if the nays got the last word in that particular movement.
Yes. If I was writing that symphony out today, for instance, I couldn't possibly have written that movement. It wouldn't have made any sense at all.
And who's speaking when you go into that very peaceful and lilting melody between the big tooties?
Well, I suppose it's the good people on each side being met by a blunt response and a drawing of lines and never shall we coalesce, you know. So trying to portray that.
What kind of response did you have from friends in Ulster who heard this music?
I can't recall anything specific, you know, other than you know, the symphony seemed to go down reasonably well, but nothing specific about that particular movement. It didn't sort of give rise to any conversations.
Did you get any conversation from any over any of the movements from people that live in those provinces?
Yes, certainly some friends who live in Kerry were rather taken by the opening stretch of the first movement, and because it's a very unusual geographical layout, the county, and it seemed to catch that for people.
And now we come to your own province, where you were born, and I assume where you've lived your life.
That's right, indeed.
And
Leinster.
Leinster. Now, where does that? I don't even know that word. Where does that word come from?
Well, the Irish word is lion, L-A-I-G-H-I-N. It's an anglicized version of that word, just as my own name is an anglicized version of O'Kinchely, which is the original name, which is a very old Irish name. So the Kinsella is an anglicized version of that. And I can quite understand a lot of people, most people who don't know me are not too familiar with the Irish names. They say Kinsella.
Well, I got it wrong the first time we... I got it wrong the first time I talked to you, but... This movement has been called magisterial. Do you agree with that description?
Well, yes, I suppose, in a sense, it's kind of summing up the great weight of progress and industry and everything else has been in Leinster. And there was, during the British occupation times, it was called the Pale. And roughly from County Louth down to parts of Wicklow would have been the border, and all other parts of the country would have been outside the Pale. So it was a well-to-do part of the country, with the rest being markedly less well off.
Let's listen to the opening of this final movement, describing the counties of Dublin, Louth, Wicklow, Meath, Kilkenny, and Carlow. Let's listen. John, that opening to your last movement is definitely very different from the first three. It has a kind of majesty and Does your area of Ireland feel that way to you?
Well, yes. Not so much majesty as centralization, if you like, and much heavier population and industry and general activity, if you like. But we do have the most beautiful county in Ireland, in just south of where I am.
That's,
at the moment.
That is Wicklow. That is Wicklow,
right.
And I know it well because I've been there to play a place called the European Club times, and I've met the owner, designer of the course, and his family who live there and take care of it.
Yes.
And I want you to know, I played it in a 60-mile-per-hour wind. It was 40 mile per hour with gusts of 60. I was the only person on the golf course, and the guys who worked on the course were actually following me around, sort of laughing at this Yank who wouldn't come off the golf course.
Did you recall meeting somebody called Eddie Fallon?
Yes, absolutely.
He's one of my best friends.
Oh, see, golf brings everybody together. What can I say?
Oh, God, yeah. We've been listening to music together since 1950.
That's wonderful. Is he still with us?
Yes.
Oh, wonderful.
He's 1 year older than me.
Well, the next time I get over to meet you, when I do get over to meet you, the next time I come to Ireland, we'll have to get together.
Absolutely. What a small world.
It is. And one time I took my daughter, Hannah, over there. We stayed at a very old inn. I wish I could name it. It was one of the oldest in Ireland, near the golf course. And she went and she rode horses for a few days while I golfed. And we had one of our best ever trips together. It was just
wonderful. Roughly, when was that to you?
That would have been in about 2004 or 5, I think.
Good heavens.
It was amazing.
That's amazing.
It's a gorgeous part of Ireland. And I fulfilled an early promise I made to my daughter when she was 6 or 7 that she would one day ride a horse on the beaches of Ireland.
Well.
That's a pretty good dad. She did.
Yes.
So that's a pretty good dad who came up with that.
Oh, well done.
So let's listen to this wonderful coda to this fourth province, which is not only, I think, a coda to Leinster, but also to the entire symphony. Let's listen. Thank you. fabulous. And again, to all our listeners, this was John Kinsella's fourth symphony, which is coupled with his third symphony and can be found on Marco Polo, either in CD form or download or streaming. Beautiful performance. John, you know, your music is so evocative. I hope you're not insulted by the following question. Have you ever been approached to write film music?
No, but you're not the first person to say that to me. A few people, you know, who I met casually after hearing some of the stuff would have assumed that I would have written film music. But
well, there's good reason for that because, I mean, as you know, the great film score writers, Max Steiner, Korngold, Miklos Rozsa, and so forth, kept up the late Romantic tradition when most composers had dropped it.
Yes.
And so in film music, you get the continuation of a traditional symphonic music, which, as you know, wasn't to be found in mainstream classical music for many years. You yourself turned away from that other stream in 1977.
I think there was a general turning away roughly around that time. People began to look for other ways of moving forward.
In fact,
Schoenberg himself, didn't he write some film music?
Yes, he did. And when he wanted to write beautiful music, he could.
Absolutely, yes.
In fact, we're going to... Oh, that's gorgeous. Of course, that's his pre-serial, pre-12-tone period, I should say.
Yes.
We're going to have a future show about that period in your life, which was a sad one for you. But we won't give away any of the story now, but we're going to do a future show about what happened in 1977 and why you turned away in a new direction in our future show. I'm wondering if the sheer exuberance of that, the finale of that fourth symphony, it must have brought people to their feet when it was first performed.
Well, yes, it did get a very good reception in the hall because the National Concert Hall here, which opened in 1981, had just installed a new organ. So in the last few minutes of the symphony, I decided to add the organ in as well, which would not come across quite as well in the recording. But it certainly made a huge sound in the hall itself with full orchestra going.
Would you consider this one of your favorite symphonies? I know you've always said your third symphony is your favorite, but where does this symphony stand in your regard?
I suppose it's about halfway down. The reason I like number three is that it's totally coherent, and I like how tightly it worked out. And I was just listening to the symphony a few days ago in preparation for our discussion, and I could see many ways in which I could revise it, just as Sibelius did his fifth symphony.
Some people think it's a little too long. Do you agree with that?
Yes. If I was revising it, it would certainly be tightened a lot. And even in my revision, which appears on the record, it's quite a tightened version of the original. So, time allowing, maybe it's something I can do again.
Well, I know you've got your 11th symphony in your pocket, and we're looking for a performance and or a recording, and that will come, but... John Kinsella, thanks once again for joining us from Dublin on Church and Culture.
And thank you, Dean, for your invitation, which I value very highly.
Thank you. And we value having, we'll have you back again next few weeks. We'll do some more. And to all of you who are listening, be back at this hour, this day, next week.
If you have any comments or questions about church and culture, you can contact Deal Hudson at dhudson@avemariaradio.net.
Is a message brought to you by the Catholic Biblical School of Michigan.
The Bible illustrates God's relationship with us as a bridegroom with his bride, and this prompts us to consider what that means. The prophets described God as the groom and said he would seek out his bride when she wandered away. Do we hear God calling to us when we wander away? Song of Songs is about two lovers, often interpreted as the story of the soul with God. Do we believe that God cares for us that intimately? Jesus uses parables to describe himself as the bridegroom, and Paul speaks of the church as Jesus' bride. Do we see ourselves loved by a groom who will sacrifice his life for us? In Revelation, the bridal imagery culminates in heaven with the marriage banquet of the Lamb with his bride. Do we look forward to that celebration as we prepare for it now on earth? To learn more about the meaning of imagery in Scripture, visit the Catholic Biblical School of Michigan at cbsmich.org.
Here's a Family Minute with child psychologist Dr. Ray Guarendi from Ave Maria Radio.
Is discipline hard for you to do? If you're like most parents on a day-to-day basis, it's the hardest thing you do. As a matter of fact, I would guess that you terribly underestimated how difficult it is to have resolve and stamina and perseverance and stick-to-itiveness. Many parents will say to me, you know, it's easier just to let them go. I can do it myself. She badgers me until I crack. It's easier just to do it on my own. My response, yes, it is in the short term. And yes, discipline is probably on a day-to-day basis the hardest thing you will have to do as a parent. There is no question about that. If it were easy, in all likelihood, kids would learn on their own. But it isn't. It takes a lot out of us. It makes us feel guilty. Sometimes we question whether we're being too strict. Are our standards too high? Maybe just a little bit old-fashioned, out of touch with the trendy 90s. If you keep in mind that by its nature, discipline takes work, you will be less frustrated by this whole discipline process. And yes, in fact, it is very hard to discipline. There is only one thing harder. Live with an undisciplined child. I'm Dr. Ray.
This is Father Frank Pavone of Priests for Life. One day, the Lord Jesus took Peter, James, and John up on a mountain and was transfigured before their eyes. His clothes became as bright as the sun. Moses and Elijah were seen speaking with him about his upcoming passion, and the Father's voice was heard declaring that he was his son. All this was a sign to those apostles that they should not be troubled by the events that would unfold. The betrayal and crucifixion of Jesus were to fulfill the Father's plan for our salvation. The transfiguration is also a sign to us. Circumstances can make us forget that every human life is part of the Father's plan, and that the glory of God is to be seen in every person, no matter how burdensome, unplanned, or ill that person may be. This is Father Frank Pavone on Ave Maria Radio.
Weekdays at 10 a.m., there's More to Life.
Hi, I'm Dr. Greg Popchak.
And I'm Lisa Popchak. Each weekday on More to Life, we'll explore the life you were meant to live through the theology of the body.
Tune in for great advice, guests, and the information.